everyone, welcome to the Snapcast. Rob here, joined by Jerry, and then a special guest, Drew Debevoise.
Hey Rob, what's up?
Not much, Jerry, how have you been?
Chill, you know, still doing the nursing school thing while playing Friday Night Magic at my LGS.
Excellent, excellent. Yeah, we've seen those results. We'll talk a little bit about that here in a minute, but first I do want to get to our guest. Drew, welcome.
Hey, how's it going, y'all?
Doing pretty good. Really excited to have you on. Go ahead, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, I'm in the Navy right now. I'm on the USS Nebraska. It's a ballistic missile submarine.
Nice.
Started playing Magic with you back in 2015 on the USS Maryland. Started around M15, played in a couple of PPTQs back then, played for about a year, and then I stopped. And it's kind of been an off and on thing. Every time I get back into it, I get way too serious with it and, you know, burn out with it. And then a couple months later, I always keep coming back to Magic. So right now, I'm just trying to maintain a good balance.
Yeah, it's tough trying to do this in like a casual way, I would say, once you get that taste for the competitive scene.
Exactly.
But, go ahead.
And that's just like, I have too much of a competitive mindset anyways to play anything casual or 50-50. Like, I got to be all in on something if I'm going to do it.
He's my favorite person right now.
Yeah, I mean, that's how it is. Like, you have to, especially if you're going to play it and you want to do well. Like, yes, the casual players out there, not ragging on you one bit, but like, just getting into that big competitive scene for some of us, it's what we want. And for me right now, I would say it really sucks not having paper play, because I definitely prefer paper over Magic Online play. But Drew, you've had some success in Magic Online recently, haven't you?
Magic Online, yes, today I actually qualified for the Mana Traders. I just got Mana Traders again. I took a break for it during the move. I recently moved from South Carolina to Washington and actually got a real computer setup with dual monitors and everything like that. I had been playing on about a $300 laptop. So I started streaming and started trying to take these tournaments more seriously. So I played Modern for the first time today. I sleeved up Humans, which is a deck I've had success with in the past. I think it's a perfect time to play Humans right now. So I created a deck, made a sideboard what I expected the meta to be, which is, you know, wide open, which is perfect for Humans. But I ended up going 7-1.
Congrats. That's qualifying, right?
Yeah, so not technically qualified yet. I have to play 10 games at least, so I can get into two more games and just concede if I want to. 7 wins is enough to qualify.
Absolutely.
10 total games.
Now, if I remember correctly, though, if you finish high enough during this phase one, you actually do get a prize. So it'd actually be worth it for you to play, I'd like to legitimately play two more games and see if you can't finish off 9-1.
Yeah, that might be a thing. I think you have to have 20 win or 20 games played to be on their leaderboard.
Oh, okay.
What I'm looking at right now on the leaderboard is I'm number 3 as far as win percentage goes. But I would have to play 20 games to like officially get on that leaderboard.
Right. Well, definitely do it. I think that'd be awesome for you.
It's just kind of risky because, like, if you play over 10 games and then the win rate drops below that,
oh, okay,
you end up unqualifying yourself, I believe.
Ooh, yeah, never mind then. You know what? I mean, it's a risk. Humans has been doing very well for you, but of course, with Magic Online, like, you don't know what you're going to play against. I'm just curious, you've done 8 matches so far. What have you gone against?
So I've played against almost the entire format. I've played against Burn, Ponza, Jund, Tron, Grixis Death Shadow, Boggles, Scapeshift, and there's one more that's not coming to mind right now. So I've had a smorgasbord of matchups that I've played against right now, and Humans just feels great against the meta. The Tron matchup was a little rough. Tron looks really good right now.
Gotcha.
But I think I could bring in the Collector Oofs in the sideboard if I really want to kind of shore up that matchup. Collector Oofs in the past, back in 2019 when I was playing Humans, made the Tron matchup feel very favorable.
Now, is that all you're going to need for that matchup? Do you think you would bring in things like Damping Sphere or anything else that could possibly punish them?
So I hate Damping Sphere as a card. but I'm currently playing it in Humans right now. Like, I love Gaddock Teeg as more of like the answer. The only problem with the way the Tron decks are constructed right now is they're playing three Worm Coil engines, and they're playing the Ulamog. So their answers aren't like the Oblivion Stones and the
All Is Dust
and the Ugins and the All Is Dust. Like, they're playing that stuff in the sideboard, but they're not playing it main deck right now. Main deck, they're playing three Worm Coil engines. So Gaddock Teeth does very little against Tron right now.
Okay, now how about being a little suicidal and me offering you our Lord and Savior Magus of the Moon? It is a human.
I can confirm. I like me some Magus of the Moon.
I am not the biggest fan of that card. I've never really ran any humans.
Yeah, no, I think very few people have actually done it. No way. There's actually a list with it right now. It is identified in humans. Yeah, two of them in the sideboard right here on this 7-0 list from Billy the Kitty. That's wonderful. Anyways, but no, that's...
Yeah, it was a big deal when the Uro Omnath piles were a thing. People were playing Magus of the Moon, but it's just never really been my type of card.
Gotcha. Yeah, no, it is definitely a niche card, and you got to be careful with it because you can absolutely punish yourself because they'll be like, oh, I got nothing but mountains. That's cool. You don't have Aether Vial now, so you also have mountains.
Exactly. And one thing I will say with humans is please play the 20 lands version if you're going to play humans. Like, you need to have those opening bursts for your hands, and if you play 19 lands, you're going to have a lot more land or a lot more opening hands that you just can't play because you don't have enough lands.
Well, then we'll definitely have to do a little deck tech with you so you can go through your deck and we can see the ins and outs of it, because it seems like you have a really good grasp on it with your previous experience. And then also your recent experience now as well.
Yeah, exactly.
Jerry, now I know you really haven't played too much post-ban modern yet, but pre-ban modern, and I'm using pre-ban in the tense of the February 15th banning announcement, you've been doing quite well in your local events too, correct?
Yeah, I've been doing fantastic. I'm first place in my league currently, with my worst outing being like 4 weeks ago when I went 3-2. Other than that, I'm a constant 4-1-5-0 getter.
Excellent.
Wow, that's awesome.
And then we had the 1 week where we had the six rounds and I went 6-0. So I was like, all right, we're in.
So what decks were you running then? Because I kind of have a feeling that I know what you were running, and it's a sad day for you.
Ad Nauseam, Oops All Spells, and Obosh Prowess to keep people honest.
Okay.
There's a couple guys there that were really trying to spike for me. One kid played three copies of Kaya's Guile in an Esper Stoneblade list, and I was like, gotcha, turn one Swift Spear, let's go, boy.
Oh my goodness.
And then he had that look on his face like, you've got to be kidding me. I'm like, no. Another guy comes in with Infect, the next table he's playing Infect thinking he's got me. I'm like, nah, you're just dead.
Yeah. Yeah, Infect is it's such a tough meta to try to sneak a good Infect spike.
Nah, it won't happen as long as Lightning Bolt decks are as good as they are. So,
right.
There's too much interaction's too necessary right now for Infect to spike, in my opinion.
Gotta keep them honest.
Yep.
Then... So I'll play between the different decks.
Okay. As for me, I've only been doing like Wednesday Night Moderns. The Magic scene down in Jacksonville died off almost completely with COVID. Our LGS started up some Magic events, but not a whole bunch. And what we were able to do is we were actually able to get about 10 to 12 people showing up for Modern, which is fantastic. But sadly, nothing too much more beyond that. I played a whole slew of different decks, though. I was doing a different combo deck every week, to the point where I even pulled out Battle of Wits.
Hey, man, I played it in Standard. I went 5-0 in a Friday Night Magic. It can happen.
Yeah, it was, I went 0-2, I dropped round 3, just I was tired of shuffling the deck, but I did win with a Through the Breach Emrakul. Never got the one with Battle of Wits, but I did get to Emrakul someone, and like, okay, yep, that's a thing. Oh, of course, why wouldn't you have that in your hand?
Well, I mean, you got to live the dream, so
yeah,
sounds like it's well worth it to bring it out that night.
Exactly. I had to buy one of those 300 card like dragon shells just for the deck, and that was my deck box. People thought I was joking. It's like, oh, let me get my deck box out, and I slammed that down. I'm like, what is this? It's like, it's my deck box, and opened it up, and they're like, what? It's like, welcome to Battle of Wits.
I played against a 227 card deck in Standard last weekend in the SEG Tour. It was just ridiculous.
What? Why?
It was playing It was playing like this enchantment combo, like the enchantment combo I think you see in Legacy sometimes.
Okay.
But I mean, obviously that's a little bit more consistent. But it just like, it wasn't really a functional deck. I don't know why somebody would bring that to the tournament, but I mean, it's cool.
Gotcha.
Yeah, that's it. It's a coolness factor.
Yeah.
It didn't even have a sideboard. It was funny.
As a matter of fact, if you play Battle of Wits now, you get Yorion as a free companion.
Oh, there you go.
But, just a right there. Today, the biggest thing I want to discuss as part of our welcome back is the February 15th ban announcement. And primarily, we are going to be covering Modern today. Historic, Pioneer, and Legacy will come and follow on episodes. But I think Modern is one of the biggest formats that we are currently seeing the shakeup. And is definitely one of the most played, I would say, among us out of the three other formats that saw the ban come through. Before we get to the bans, though, real quick here. There's two plugs I need to do. The first one is for the Red 5 Podcasting Network. So the Red 5 Podcast Network here was originally an all Star Wars shows. They have about 20 plus podcasts talking about Star Wars lore, movies, expanded universe, everything you can think of Star Wars related. Multiple podcasts are there. And one of our former guests, Brad Tracy, is also a member of this network. We have been invited to join them. I believe we are their first Magic the Gathering podcast. So big thank you to the Red 5 Network for inviting us onto the shows. And also for anybody who is interested in Star Wars podcasts, be sure to check out red5network.com as well as all major podcasting outlets. They have a very active Twitter account too. And be sure to follow all the other sub podcasts for any of the latest episodes that they have coming out. Last one too, this is a big shout out to the Magic the Gathering Players Group on Facebook. Whether you are new or seasoned in playing Magic, the Magic the Gathering Players Group on Facebook is a wonderful place you can go to for non-toxic assistance. Any questions you may have, whether the most basic of things, I've had people ask, "What? How do I attack a Planeswalker?" all the way up to tuning decks, whether it's Commander, Modern, Standard, whatever it may be. It is a very refreshing community to be a part of because we've all dealt with the toxic community of Magic the Gathering that can't exist. And they do a really good job at stamping all of that out. So definitely give those two areas a check out. Remember, that is the Red 5 Network for Star Wars podcasting and the Magic the Gathering Players Group on Facebook. All right.
Yep, that's a really important aspect to have in Magic, just because I feel like the Magic community tends to gatekeep. So to have a community where you can go and ask questions and not feel dumb for asking them, I think is very important with introducing new players into the game.
Absolutely.
Yeah, definitely. Also being able to post your ideas without getting absolutely shot in the foot, that might help too.
Yeah. That's one of the greatest things, and also one of the most disheartening things I would say with us as a community is we all want to grow. We all want more players in. And the worst thing you can do is immediately just mock somebody for not knowing something. Let's get to the big announcements here. So we had a slew of bannings in Modern. I think this is one of the biggest bannings Modern has seen since the initial bans came out in its inception. Would I be wrong?
It's one of the biggest bannings that Magic has seen ever.
Yeah, definitely. I think the only ban that compares with it was when Punishing Fire, Wild Nacatl, Bitter Blossom, Rite of Flame, and there's another card, Cloud Post, all went at the same time.
Yeah. And it's funny because if you look at some of those cards, really one, Wild Nacatl was banned from Modern. Now unbanned, unplayed.
Remember, Curdape was banned in Legacy, Extended when that was a format.
Yep.
Tells you where we've gone now.
Exactly.
Kind of makes you wonder how many other cards could get unbanned and probably be unplayed again.
But we've had one major rules change, and really it's more of a rules clarification, and we really haven't needed this clarification until we've had dual phase cards. And then we have Uro, Titan of Nature's Wrath. We knew this ban was coming. We got a nice little forewarning of it whenever it was announced in the Secret Lair. Field of the Dead, Mystic Sanctuary, Simmons Spirit Guide, and Tybalt's Trickery are all banned in Modern. And what we're going to do here is we're going to provide the statement of why WotC banned it, give our thoughts on the card being banned, and then we're going to go through major decks that have been affected, if the deck can recover, and also what decks will now thrive because of these bannings. Because you always get that is, these decks were holding down other ones from being playable, or why play these other decks that may have a good win percentage when I can just play the best deck in the format. So let's go, I would say, with the first one here on the list, Uro, Titan of Nature's Wrath, banned in Modern. this is part of the Pioneer statement too, but Uro has become one of the most dominant creatures in Pioneer and as well as in Modern, and several of the most played and most winning decks. Ultimately, they felt that Uro's power level is out of line with other cards and strategies within Pioneer and Modern, and to open space in the metagame for a greater variety of mid-range strategies and other slower decks to coexist, they chose to ban Uro. Thoughts?
Well, the problem when you design a card that's your best card against both aggro and control matchups, it's just too flexible. You can't have a card like that. You need to be able to tune your games or tune your decks for specific metagames. And when you don't even have to put any thought behind that, when you can just plug in four Uros and call it a day, that's an issue.
I agree with that assessment. And even in its worst matchups in combo, it still provides an additional free card and a free mana acceleration. It just, there's no situation where it's bad. I think my best assessment of Uro is that even its fail case, it is always a 2-for-1 in the favor of the Uro player because of the escape mechanic.
Exactly. And just imagine trying to deal with it. Imagine trying to bring graveyard hate for Uro. So you bring in your graveyard hate, you're losing a card, but they're getting the ramp and card advantage out of it. And, like, you know, what do you do?
Yeah, the only way to make it a true 1-for-1 is some type of cryptic command with Relic of Progenitus out. I don't know. It's not even really a 1-for-1. It still requires two cards to make it happen.
Yep.
Not good for the game.
No, and with the ETB effect too, being low cost and the escape mechanic, it was very easy to do in Modern. This is one thing Drew and I were discussing before you came in here, Jerry. With the fetches, with the low-cost cantrips, the discard effects that we could see also, and the low-cost, very good spells that we have. Being able to escape it on turn 4 is not, you know, a difficult thing to do, or possibly even on turn 3 with all the mana ramp.
But, I mean, even in Pioneer, where there's no fetch lands, and there's only one fetch land in Fabled Passage, it's still too powerful for that format. So yep. Clearly the card doesn't need much help, and obviously it got more of it. So there's clearly a power discrepancy there.
Yeah, the 6/6 body with the, when it ETBs or attacks, draw a card, you may play an additional land this turn, gain 3 life. That is just all too much. Do you think there would, if they would have removed one of those abilities, this would have been a non-banned card?
The only ability that would be removed in my eyes would have to be escape. It would have to have another way of staying on the battlefield.
I think if it didn't gain life, it'd be okay, because that at least allows aggro strategies to get underneath of it.
I like that. That's fine too.
Yep.
If it didn't draw cards, it'd also be okay because it allows control strategies to, you know, play around it.
Yeah, and I mean, it doesn't help too that Simic already had so many wonderful tools. In the form of Growth Spiral, Arboreal Grazier, like so many other ways to ramp into this incredibly fast. So that, yeah, again, that was not helping it one bit.
Yeah, I don't know if you saw Mason Clark's tweet the other day, but it was like, oh, the standard that could have been, you've got like, I'm trying to find the tweet right now, you've got like Uro, Oko, Omnath, Escape to the Wilds, Genesis, like that deck could have been a thing.
Yeah. That's the terrifying reality of it too, is that these cards were all printed and meant to be played together in Standard. Mm-hmm. So,
and part of me wonders if that all would have been okay had all the cards been legal in yep. Standard, if they hadn't banned them one at a time.
No like, way.
No ban Standard. I wonder what that would look like right now.
I think it would be a one deck format, and it'd be the deck you explained. Like, I think that would be the end of it.
God, well, what about Fires?
Yeah, Fires would be played in that deck probably.
Maybe. Because
why not?
Next two cards. We're going to do both of these together just because they're both lands. It's very rare that we actually see lands get banned. The last one that got banned out of Modern was, what, Eye of Ugin?
Yep, Eye of Ugin. And okay. Then previous to that was Valakut the Molten Pinnacle on the original ban list with Dark Depths.
Yep, which saw Valakut actually getting unbanned. But now Valakut's new stepbrother, Field of the Dead, has been banned, and Mystic Sanctuary also got banned. And their reasonings for these. So, along with Uro, we're addressing two land cards frequently used by ramp and control strategies that we feel are decreasing diversity of gameplay patterns. Field of the Dead and Mystic Sanctuary. Both lands create repetitive non-interactive game states in the late game for relatively low deck building costs. To promote more back and forth gameplay and interaction over win conditions, we're choosing to remove them.
Yeah, to amplify on the low deck building cost, you know, a lot of the issues with control decks is sometimes you draw your threats at the wrong time. Sometimes your interaction doesn't line up perfectly. Well, when you don't have to have a threat slot in your deck, like your threat slot is your land, now you're not really running into that issue so more. So you can literally just dirtle answer their threats one for one, and I mean, they don't have much of an opportunity to get underneath you, because eventually you just have that inevitability where you're just going to start fetching, and each of your fetch lands represents 2/2/2 zombies. I do think Mystic Sanctuary could have stayed unbanned, but I think they just want to get all the bans out in one foul swoop right now and not really leave anything up to get banned in the near future.
I agree with you 100% with the Field of the Dead ban. It takes out the opportunity cost, and all control mid-range shells, whatever you want to call them, is not there. You don't need to put any threats in your deck when the threats are built into your mana base, which is free. As for Mystic Sanctuary, that card had to go. The unhealthy play pattern of Cryptic Command, bounce, return Mystic Sanctuary, play Mystic Sanctuary, loop Cryptic Command over and over and over again with a Planeswalker, that's not healthy for the game. That also, in a world post-COVID and pre-COVID, Magic already had an issue with people trying to watch their coverage. That play pattern is unwatchable. That would turn off so many people immediately, because the game's effectively, it's over. There's no really getting out of that lock unless you have some special series of cards and you're some type of special series of deck. But for the most part, in 90 to 95% of these matchups, that was a game-ending play, and we're just going through the motions at this point. That interaction needed to go. The honest question is, do you ban Mystic Sanctuary or do you ban Cryptic Command? I think the Sanctuary is fine.
I don't believe Cryptic Command is a problem. That card's been around for a long time. It hasn't ever...
I wasn't implying that it was a problem. That's kind of my idea, was like, you gotta ban one of these to stop the loop. Ban the land. That's harder to interact with.
Yeah.
Now...
Yeah, I agree with that.
Do you think they could have saved Mystic Sanctuary in design without making it unplayable?
You would think the three islands cost would be unplayable, but that's more of a modern thing. Like, it's kind of like the same argument with Deathrite Shaman, why it's not banned in Pioneer. Like, can't really abuse it the way you want to in Pioneer that you can in Modern, because of fetch lands.
Gotcha.
Yeah, and if you didn't make it fetchable, it'd probably be unplayable if it was just like a land rather than an island.
Yep.
I don't know. I think it's actually playable if it's not fetchable. I think you just play a couple copies.
That's the big issue, is that it's fetchable.
That is the big thing. Yeah. You can get it at any point of the game when you see fit.
Because some people would try to draw a parallel to, well, people were playing Castle Vantress.
In Modern?
That's the thing, though, like, not in Modern. They were playing it in Standard, yes, but I don't think Castle Vantress saw a lot of Modern play.
Before people picked up on the Mystic Sanctuary nonsense, there was at least one copy of Castle Vantress in these Field of the Dead decks. That went out for the four copies of Sanctuary.
Gotcha.
Like, I know that was... Castle Vantress was played in Blue-White and Pioneer, because I have that in my Blue-White Pioneer deck.
Yeah, because it's way better there, because you're not beholden to, I must have three islands. You can actually do Castle Vantress on the back of Glacial Fortresses and Basic Plains.
I will say, I don't think I've ever won a single game where I've activated a Castle Vantress.
I think that's more of a problem with the Pioneer format itself, but that's a discussion for another time.
Yeah.
All right. I'm actually going to go out of order here for this next one, because I want to talk to Tybalt Trickery real quick. Tybalt Trickery, this was one I think a lot of us saw the writing on the walls as soon as we saw how we can break it and how quickly we can cascade into it. Tybalt Trickery in several formats has been seeing a lot of play, and we see Modern as the format where those decks are uniquely problematic via Tybalt Trickery interaction with Cascade, and also like just the big threats we're able to get out of it. While the overall win rate of the deck hasn't shown to be problematic, we believe it contributes to non-games that make Modern less fun to play. As the goal of this update is to shake up the metagame into a more fun spot, we're concerned that a continued metagame presence of Tybalt Trickery decks would work against that goal. Therefore, we are banning Tybalt Trickery in Modern.
All right, so I'm gonna pull this apart a little bit. I agree that if they think Tybalt's trickery is too powerful in the sense of, like, because it's very comparable to Hypergenesis the way it worked. Hypergenesis being banned in the onset, this is a weaker version of it, still should probably be banned. So at least they're consistent on that. However, if you're contributing the argument to creating non-games, a bunch of games in Magic are already non-games by design of the game itself, being able to draw lands or too many lands, you know, or not any lands at all. I don't like that argument. It's not an argument to me. That's just an opinion. As well, that's the aspect of combo. The combo is the idea of combo is that you're supposed to get away with a game one, and then games two and three are when your opponents have that 15 card sideboard, which is why we play games and matches, to where they get to play those narrower answers for your combo decks. That's kind of the thing I have a problem with it there. Also, the deck had a real whiff rate. It was like 80% on success, and success was dictated on hitting Chancellor of the Tangle was technically success, or Chancellor of the Annex was a successful hit, but yet those cards get answered by single mana spells, like Path to Exile. So I'm not in line with those reasons as it to being banned. I don't like those. I've never liked those at all.
So my issue with the design space recently is, I agree with your assessment that you should be able to sideboard into those hate cards, but I don't think the hate cards have been powerful enough as of late. I think they need to build more hate hosers for those type of decks, and it would open up the design space for them to, for these type of decks to be a thing. You just bring in the hate cards.
So my issue with it is it's more that Tybalt's Trickery is banned on the back wheels of a real faulty mechanic allowing free spells. That being the Cascade mechanic. It obviously, alongside Simeon's Spirit Guide, was able to generate extremely fast kills that were very hard to interact with. To where I feel like Tybalt's Trickery could have existed without Cascade, and it would have been fine with, like, your four copies of Tormod's Crypt, like, as a way to go about it.
Yeah, I don't know. I played against a Tybalt Trickery deck in Standard a couple days ago, and that just kind of... I mean, granted, you have more answers for that kind of thing in Modern, but that's just not really fun gameplay for me. It's non-interactive.
Yeah, in Standard, it's pretty bad. Should it have been banned in Best of One Standard? Absolutely. 100%. Should have been gone immediately, and yet we still have it.
I am shocked that it did not get touched in Best of One, because I am a degenerate, and that's what I play in Best of One on Arena.
And that's how I got to Diamond in two sittings. It took no... There's no skill. It's just keep mulliganing until you get it. You keep rolling until you get it, and you win about 70% of your games. That's enough to keep rolling you up.
So this brings up a good question then for that. Is it the London Mulligan that makes Tybalt's Trickery broken, or is it just the card itself?
It's the card itself.
It's probably the London Mulligan. Like, it probably makes it just playable enough to, or just consistent enough to be playable.
And that's where I look at it. Whenever I can look at my hand and be like, I can mold a 6, I can mold a 5, I can mold a 4, I can mold a 3 and be okay with that, that's when we have an issue in Magic. When I'm okay with mulling the 3, because all I need to keep at that point is my no-cost spell, one land, and Tybalt's Trickery. I'm running about 22 lands. I'm probably going to top deck a land.
I mean, I molded 2 and 1, if that tells you anything.
Right. And also, like, the algorithms, too, apparently, on Arena, kind of help foster you to get that curve, right? That's almost been confirmed?
Yeah, that's how the algorithms work. It tries to balance you out on spells to lands every time.
So having that card and that this built-in almost cheat, if you will, because you don't have that in paper. You have your shuffle in paper, which is why I like paper more than I like these the online variants, especially Arena, because sometimes you got these little hidden algorithms in there that could determine your draw rather than you knowing what your deck is. There's no randomizer being, hey, this is your next one. Your randomizer was done at the beginning of the match, and you're ready to go.
Yep.
Well, I mean, just to be clear, like, the algorithm is only in Best of One. Best of One is kind of designed as a format, I think, for mobile in the long term. Like, I think mobile Best of One is really going to be a thing, and the way you're going to get more people playing that game that want to play that type of style of game is by having more actual games. So by having more lands in your opening hand, being able to take less mulligans, I think that's good for the game in general.
That is very good for the game in general.
Yes.
However, that is not good for Tibalt's trickery, and why it's still in best of one standard, that is mind-blowing.
And it's probably because of one of the statements they used here in Widespan and Modern, the overall win rate hasn't shown it to be problematic. But to use their own words against them, it can make for very unfun games.
I mean, if your win rate is 55% with Tibalt's trickery, if all you do is play 8 hours a day, you're going to hit Mythic at some point in best of one. That's how the math works.
So I kind of have a cherry. I kind of have a problem with the way that I like to cherry pick between going using win rate as an excuse and using fun games as an excuse.
Right.
I think fun games should always be the driving factor. After all, this is a game. People play this to have fun. Like if the win rate of a deck is pretty high, but the games are fun, like Arclight Phoenix was back in 19, I think that's healthy for the game.
Yep.
Yeah, definitely. But the other thing is, losing isn't fun. Who cares? Like, that's kind of where I'm at with that argument. Losing's not meant to be fun.
No.
It's not losing. It's not playing the game at all.
Or just having, like, zero chance. Like, from the get-go, from turn one, it's like, oh, okay, here we go. Yep, this is where I lose. Not like, you know, turn three or turn four because your top decks are crap or your opponent just had the god hand, whatever it may be.
No, hold on. See, even when I whiffed on Tibalt's trickeries those few times, I still had fun doing it.
Oh, okay.
I thought it was fun. You see, fun is a purely subjective thing. Like, I don't like using fun, a subjective matter. Like, some people find, like, grinding control decks against each other is fun. Personally, I can't stand that. It's unwatchable and it's unplayable, in my opinion. Just an opinion. But that's why I don't like to use fun as a driving factor in deciding bans.
Gotcha.
I think that's why they keep designing cards like that, because, I mean, fun is subjective. So they want to be able to allow people to have fun with these type of cards, but when it becomes a community issue, as a Magic community, if it's overall becoming an issue with people having fun, then that's when something has to go.
Right.
And speaking...
That's why we saw Uro get the axe and Field of the Dead and all that.
Yeah.
After a year.
And
took them long enough.
And then for the last of the banned cards here, we'll move beyond Simin Spirit Guide.
I hate this one.
So Simin Spirit Guide is a card we have had our eye on for some time as an enabler that speeds up fast combo decks. As the modern card pool has grown, so too has the capability of decks to assemble early game winning combinations from hand, with some recent examples including Oops All Spells, Charbelcher Variants, and some builds of the recent Tibalt Trickery deck, to slow down the category of combo decks as a whole and give opponents more time to set up interactive plays in the early game. Simin Spirit Guide, you are banned.
Okay, so I think this is an issue of having Force of Negation in the format instead of Force of Will. When there's an answer to hold those type of things in check, I think it's fine for a format. When you can just play a Balustrade Spy on turn one or turn two because you have two Simian Spirit Guides and a land, well, I think that's unhealthy for the format, because when the format itself doesn't have answers for that type of thing, that type of strategy shouldn't exist.
So my issue with this ban is that this Simian Spirit Guide ban is falling on the back wheels of not one, but two really bad mechanics that should have just never been made, should have never made it out the get-go. First one being Cascade. We've seen this over time and time again, that a Cascade deck tends to break the format in some way. This is why Hypergenesis has been banned since 2011. That is just too powerful of an interaction. Living End is still a deck, and I'm surprised it didn't get banned in the Splinter Twin era, because that deck had a phenomenal matchup versus Twin. Why would you play Living End? Because it beats up on Twin decks. They go to stick their Splinter Twin on their thing, they make their infinite dudes, and they swing. You respond to the Living End and kill them on the crackback. That was a really really powerful mechanic. And now for a while, we all thought that the Teferi Time Raveler was good enough to hold the Cascade mechanic back. It only took another card or two in this case, or three, whatever you want to call it, being printed to cause the mechanic to go overboard. Turns out, being able to Cascade into a 2-drop, that the ability says you can cast the 7-drop on the other side a turn sooner because of this, it wouldn't matter if this happened on turn two or turn three. It's still broken either way. I'm going over the top on the mana cost here. So in lieu of that, a bunch of other decks are getting punished because of a Simeon Spirit Guide ban versus what they already did to fix that interaction. They just changed the rules on Cascade. If you change the rules on Cascade, why did Simeon need to go? The other part is the other bad mechanic that was made, and I'm going to get a lot of hate for saying this, I think Modal Double Face cards was a very bad mechanic because of the way they work, especially the modal lands on the backside. I can now play a 60-card deck with zero lands, cast his 4-mana creatures, and then flip decks intermittently. That's just a bad, bad mechanic design. I think they could have banned both the spies right then and there and been done with it and kept Simeon Spirit Guide around, because Simeon's not the problem. Like, not in that deck. There are other ways. That deck could kill much better and much more consistently without it now, as testing has shown. It just works still. You've done nothing to slow the deck down. I mean, you slowed it down a turn in terms of turn rate, but Burn is not beating a turn 3 Balustrade spy no matter how many times they try. You're just not doing it. So Simeon got the axe on the back of two mechanics that should have just been... Something should have been done to fix them. Like, I think Modal Double Face cards should have had a rule change saying that the back half should be included on the front half in the event of something like that. Since it's two castable halves, why shouldn't it be able to do that? Or in the case of... I don't know, like, they could have designed the card where it's like... Like, the adventure mechanic does it best, where there is two spells on the front. Like, if you wanted to do this, you could have created a land half of the spell in one corner, and then a spell half in the other corner, and it plays both. And it counts as a land when you flip it over, so you can't do the Balustrade Spy thing. That's kind of my problem with it. It's just bad mechanics, but go ahead.
So I think it's good the way the mechanics are designed, specifically for Standard. It allows more consistency, more actual games. I do think they should rattle these rules when they're obviously, like, they're instantly a problem. Like, this Oops All Spells deck was recognized before the cards even came out. Like, as the design team, like, I'm sure they could at least know that's going to be an issue. So there's really not much of a cost to just rattle these rules ahead of time. Same thing with the Valkyrian Tybalt. There should be room in the design space to make these kinds of cards and new mechanics. Like, I think that's good for the game. One of the things they've suggested in the past is errating cards, like, specifically on Arena, which, you know, that's kind of an issue because they print the physical cards, so they're not able to do that type of thing like they are in games like Hearthstone. But I do think in order for Magic to grow, there needs to be design space for these kinds of cool mechanics to exist. I'd just like to see a more proactive approach to errating rules rather than a reactive approach.
And all these erratas that I'm mentioning aren't even text on the cards. You just errata the rules. The double face card should represent both faces in the deck. It just should. Why it doesn't is because, well, it's only the front face you see. Well, if we played Magic the way it was supposed to be played without card sleeves way back in the day, I know, dangerous guys, but without the card sleeves there, you would see the back half of these cards. It's what you do when you draft them. You draft a double face card, everyone knows I pulled this Shatterskull Smashing, so you know I'm going to be doing something red. So why is this not a part of the actual constructed game? I don't know.
I'm just imagining people playing the dual lands without card sleeves right now, and it's making me cringe.
No, it happened.
Cringe story. First time I went to go test out some Legacy, this was at Kaboom in Virginia Beach, and sure enough, there's a guy there barebacked, no sleeves or anything, shuffling a deck. And he asks if everyone wanted to play some Legacy. I'm like, sure, why not? Confused, because he's not having any sleeves. Turns out it was Legacy Elves with Gaia's Cradles in there. Now, this was like 2014, 2015, right when I bought Sneak and Show. So, you know, prices were significantly less than what they were now. But still, the
Cradles
guy was...
still $100.
And riffle shuffling them. Right, yeah, so cringe story of the day out. As for Simeon Spirit Guide, Jerry, we've talked about this one before. We've both made the agreements. Wizards hates free mana. Mm-hmm. Mana Monkey was just that. It was free mana. It's a shame to see it go. I do believe it is getting banned for some wrong reasons. There's other things they could have done. They could have foreseen to possibly keep this so that a whole bunch of other decks didn't get hit by the wayside. However... here in a few minutes, though, we're going to be talking about how these decks are going to be able to recover from them. And you're actually pretty excited about one of the decks being able to recover.
I'm actually excited about two of them being able to recover. So I'm pretty, you know, I'm at least happy that we're able to be innovative enough to figure it out. But at the same time, I don't think there's a lot of cards on the ban list that are dying for the sins of terrible card mechanics of the past that just should not be around at this point.
Gotcha.
But that's a whole discussion for another time, unless you want to go into it.
No, so next up we're going to be talking about what decks just got affected by these bans, because we got five major cards that just got banned out the gate. Anything with Uro piles gone. I think they can still somewhat survive a little bit. Do you think it actually kills that Uro mid-range deck itself?
Yeah, I mean, the Uro deck was a combination of playing different types of lands and Uro to reward you for playing them. The deck took all three of its keystone cards out. So that deck is gone. Do I think control is gone? Depends on your definition of control.
Okay.
Like, are we talking like Drago, do nothing control with no threats? I think that's gone. Do you guys agree with me on that?
Yeah, I think you're going to start seeing Stoneforge Mystic control as your control strategies. Again, like you were around the Faithless Looting banning.
I think one of the coolest things that's happening is I got a friend who, he got absolutely hammered by the Uro ban because he had three different Uro decks ready to go at any given point. Mm-hmm. I agree. I think that's a real possibility. Now he's playing Bant Stoneblade with the new Squirrel Toski.
Oh, I hate doing it.
And I'm like, yeah, I'd stick a sword on that too and draw additional cards. Mm-hmm. Can you imagine sticking a sword of fire and ice on it and connect for five, draw two cards?
That's insane. All right, next up, we got Adnaz and Oops All Spells. I think these two can go hand in hand together.
We'll talk about Oops All Spells first, because this one only has one. It really only has one direction to go.
Okay, we're not talking about recovery. We're just talking decks affected right now.
Oh, decks affected. Okay.
Yeah. So Adnaz, Oops All Spells.
Oops All Spells is fine. Okay. That deck exists still.
Okay. What about Adnaz?
Yes and no.
Okay.
It's got. In the testing we've seen, there's about like five or six different variants, and they all work. We don't know which one works the best.
Excellent. We'll talk about that in a different time then. Rakdos Midrange.
So Rakdos Midrange was kind of a deck designed to beat up on those Uro piles, you know, playing main deck Blood Moon and cards like that. So I think that was one of those decks that only existed to punish the Uro piles. I don't think that deck exists anymore.
Gotcha.
It just goes back to being Jund.
It was the hater, and the hater now is no longer needed. You did well. Hammer time
with this meta opening up, people are going to start bringing in more interaction. Hammer time existed because the format was hyper linear and people were just trying to go underneath those Uro piles. Well, now people are bringing in it. We're playing to the board a little bit more than we were before, so interactions going to be a lot bigger deal in this format moving forward.
Gotcha.
It still exists. It's just a little harder to pull it off. Got to get smart.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay.
I did not know you could still fly with a Colossus Hammer. That one threw me off.
Yep.
How's that work?
Oh, okay. So you activate your Ink Moth Nexus. You have your Sigarda's Aid on the battlefield. You throw a Colossus Hammer out, and it equips to the Ink Moth Nexus. Colossus Hammer reads is that it loses flying, so it loses flying. You reactivate the Ink Moth Nexus, it gains flying. At no point on the card text itself does it say it can't have flying. It just loses flying upon equipping it.
Yep.
Interesting. Okay.
You could do the same thing with, like, way back in the day, but this is Alpha Magic I'm talking about, where people would Earthbind to Sarah's Angel. The Sarah's Angel player would side in jump to jump it after the Earthbind resolved. It doesn't say it can't gain flying. It just says it loses flying.
Well, the equipment falls off the Ink Moth when it becomes a land again, correct?
Yeah, it falls off and you have to redo it again. But instead of paying one, you pay two. Or in this case, because you're not ever paying one, you're paying zero or ten, or that's it.
Oh, so, because you're just equipping it for free.
Equipping it for free because of Pure Steel Paladin, et cetera.
Yeah. I know I've had them like declare Ink Moth Nexus as an attacker and didn't have legal blockers. And then after the blockers were declared, then they drop the hammer on it at instant. But that works too. Yep.
That's a way to work it too. If you can't block it, it just depends on, like, if you have a Teferi Time Raveler out, you can't do that. So you got to play around it.
Gotcha. All right, spirits.
So spirits are one of those things. I don't think humans and spirits are both ever good together at the same time. I think either one or the other's good. I think we're moving into more of a linear format rather than a combo or control type format where you want a little bit more interaction than you do just raw power on the board. So right now I think we're in a humans meta. If combo decks find a way to weasel their way out of the Simian Spirit Guide shakeup, then I can see spirits being a thing, but I don't think they're as good right now as they were last week.
Oh, I didn't actually think of it that way. I was actually going to mention spirits is just a bad Uro deck. Like, if you're playing this Bant color and Uro's legal, why are you not playing Uro? But as you've said that, you have definitely put me onto that. Like, one or the other is better. Like, they just do different things with each other. Especially since, like, we're moving out of a Blood Moon meta, and the meta is getting more linear as it's a newer format, because that's what new formats do. Humans is way better. Where in a non-linear format or in a more defined modern format, spirits gets better. So, I agree. 100%.
All right. Death and Taxes.
So, Death and Taxes, again, was designed to punish these decks trying to play four-color, five-color mana bases. When blowing up the lands and Blood Moon and things like that become less valuable, Death and Taxes is just a bad humans deck.
I disagree. And
I like
Death and Taxes creature. The Death and Taxes creature base is actually good enough to handle the combo base at this point. Considering that the format is going more linear, as we have stated, this is assuming that we're going to see more Dredge decks, we're going to see more Storm decks, we're going to see more Prowess decks. Death and Taxes eats these decks up. Like, you don't need to be blowing up their lands to beat them up. You just play, like, Archon of Emyria and the game is over. Or you play mainboard Selfless Spirit and you blow them out of their graveyard. I think Death and Taxes is fine in the format. It obviously had a leg against those other decks, but I think it's still fine here.
I think you could tune Death and Taxes to beat specific metagames, but it's pretty hard with just white to cover all your bases at once.
And that's why Death and Taxes has almost never been good for the majority of Modern's history, despite always having the creatures that it had in Legacy.
Yeah.
And then here we got Cryptic Command, just the card itself. So I would say really just any Cryptic Command decks. Got a little bit weaker here.
Cryptic Command was barely playable prior to Mystic Sanctuary, and then it gained a lot of popularity. I think it's going back to being that. I mean, it's still going to show up in the control decks, don't get me wrong. It's just not going to be nearly as powerful as it was before.
Yeah, control decks aren't going to be nearly as good because they don't have their go-to card. This is the second banning that control decks have faced that has absolutely just taken them off the map. The first one was Splinter Twin, where they play the control game, the Cryptic Command remand game long enough to then just win the game on the spot. And in this case, it's play the Cryptic Command game over and over and over and over again to win the game on your lands. Both of those are very sound, very powerful plans, and that's why they're both banned out of the format for whatever reasons you have them for. So until control finds that linchpin control piece that wins in the game, that doesn't cost them deck space, that is when control gets better again.
Okay.
The other thing is, though, I do see one Cryptic Command deck doing it. There's one Magic player who could do this. He goes by the name of Timu on Magic Online. He plays Kiki combo with Kiki Jiki Mirror Breaker, Deceiver Exarch.
Of course.
The man five-o's leagues like a mad horse. So I could just see him doing it. And obviously the deck played 2-3 Cryptic Commands. So I could see him doing it, and there may be some weird meta we're in where that deck actually is the tier one choice.
I absolutely hate Kiki combo. It kicked me out of a top 16 at SCG. What was that, Indy? I believe, yeah, SCG. No, SCG Knoxville. It kicked me out of top 16. I lost round 15 to it after losing round 14 to Aaron Barich when they were playing Yawgmoth combo.
Oh, rough.
Yeah.
That's rough.
It's okay, though, because Aaron Barich went on to win. I was on Crabvine. I was one of three players that weekend to top 32 with Crabvine, so we actually put Crabvine on the map for that weekend as myself, Chris Ray, and then another player down in Houston for the Houston GP, or Austin.
That's awesome.
Anyways, so we got these decks that are affected. Now, a lot of these decks are getting affected just because their targets are gone, and there's going to be better options coming up now because what they were targeting was keeping down these decks. So they've done their job, they got rid of it, if you will, during that time. But now that these decks are no longer going to be as prevalent, there's better decks to choose. But how do the decks that were affected, how do they recover from this?
Oops All Spells, pretty simple fix. Anytime we were sideboarding out Simian Spirit Guides for interaction anyways, to interact with appropriate hate pieces. Simeon Spirit Guide just becomes Thoughtseize, and you're able to change the deck around to where you're 20 lands, 10 spells that say I win the game, 10 mana rocks in some form or fashion, and then the rest of the deck is win pieces.
Yeah, Oops All Spells is definitely going to be the premier combo deck if you still want to play that strategy. It's, I mean, it's affected, but it's still powerful enough to play right now.
Yeah,
yeah, still very powerful. I'm all about it right now.
Okay. One I would like to talk about, Neobrand. Neobrand has already made its adjustment. This was a big one that would try to win on turn one or turn two, and it would utilize Simeon Spirit Guides to generate red mana, casting into a Mana Morphous, and then being able to cast Lab Man, continuing to use Gristlebrand to draw out your deck. Well, yep. We have an easy fix for this. Thankfully, Gristlebrand is a legendary creature. We have a legendary Mox, if you will, in the form of Mox Amber. Simeon Spirit Guides are out, Mox Ambers are in, bring in a couple Springleaf Drums, and now we're still able to generate the mana to cast Laboratory Maniac and win on that turn one or turn two. It does suck not having Simeon Spirit Guide, because sometimes you need a Simeon Spirit Guide to go off of, say, Eldritch Evolution, if that was your only polymorph spell in your hand. But in this case, now we're going to have to actually use mana for that.
The one downside is now you are just actually dead to Path to Exile, full on nonstop. But other than that, the deck still does the thing. If you're going first and you did it, you did the thing.
Yep. What about you, Drew? Do you have a deck that you think can recover from this, or did Jerry and I kind of hit the only ones that we can think of?
Yeah, I think we kind of touched on the deck, I think, already, is the Blue-White Stoneforge. I think is the path control is going to go moving forward, and that's how control recovers.
Absolutely. Okay, then lastly here, now, as with every meta shakeup, what decks are going to thrive? Where should people be gravitating for good decks if they were on this Uro plan, or they just don't believe that, you know, Adnaz is still playable, or that you can still go into an Oops All Spells or Neobrand? What are some good decks that players can go to?
So if you've been playing Modern for a little bit, you've probably got some experience in some of the pillars, or pillars of the past, I would say. That's kind of what's showing up right now. First and foremost, I will say that Green-White Heliod was already one of the best decks. It did not get hit at all. I think that deck's probably tier zero right now. Not a deck I would personally play, because I don't want to click through everything on Modo, but the decks I would be playing this weekend are Humans, Dredge, Tron, Is It Prowess, and then Grixis Deck Shadow. I think there's a lot to be gained / taken advantage of this weekend, maybe the next two weekends, right now, if you do have experience in one of those decks, because there's going to be a lot of people still trying to figure out this Modern format.
I like your list. I'm very close to agreeing with almost all of this. I think that also Eldrazi Tron, I think, is actually quite close to being another one of the tier zero decks of the format, just because of the way it can interact with both a combination of combo decks and the way it just gets ahead of whoever's trying to control the game.
Yeah, I think Talos could be good right now.
The other deck I think is actually very, very playable now is Storm, especially with the addition of Bergy. It didn't actually get hit with any of the bans. And in a format that nobody knows what's going into, Storm, Dredge, like you said, if Dredge is one of the decks that people could go to in an open format that nobody knows what's happening, Storm also is in that conversation. So I believe Storm has a definite place in the format right now.
Yeah. No, I completely agree with Humans, Tron, and E-tron. And Dredge has always been just an outstanding deck to play. And I think more so, too, because it's possible that people are going to be like, hey, Uro's gone, I can get rid of my Grave Hate, because maybe that's all they saw in Magic Online was just Uro piles. And now they're going to get caught off guard because, oh, wait, Dredge is still a thing. Why'd I do this?
Even then, Dredge was actually playable in the last format because the Grave Hate was all soft. It wasn't any of the hard Leyline Rest in Peace type hate, because you were playing Uros yourself. Like, you could beat one Soul Guide Lantern as a Dredge player. Done it plenty of times. There's never a right time to use those soft Grave Hate cards. What makes like Tormod's Crypt really good is like in your Lurrus decks, where you can buy back your Tormod's Crypt or your Nihil Spellbomb to turn it into hard Grave Hate, or being able to play Rest in Peace, Leyline of the Void. Nobody was playing those then. I don't see why anyone would even start playing those now. And like you said, they may even take out the soft Grave Hate at this point. They may not be scared.
I will tell you, the first place my mind went for this format is, okay, I have to have my Graveyard Hate in my sideboard, because I think it's happened too many times where people forget about Graveyard Hate and they're like, oh, Time to bring in Dredge this weekend. I think at the start of any format, from here on out, you pretty much got to bring in your graveyard hate to cover that base. It's kind of the same thing with any new standard format when mono red is really good week one. Well, I think that's happened too many times to where people are kind of expecting that
Too relevant, too much happening.
I do think Dredge was playable. And it's just like one of those decks that you can't bring week to week, but you could definitely catch people off guard.
Absolutely. And I love this one note that you put in here, and that is I think everyone's modern collections will see a lot more like action, as well as staples hopefully coming back up in value, particularly those like Karn, the Great, or Karn Liberated, Liliana the Veil, Tarmogoyf, and Stoneforge Mystics. These cards used to have powerhouse prices. We're talking $50+, not I can get a foil foil art Goyf for $65.
Man, that's sad.
Yeah.
How the mighty have fallen to the power creep.
Yep.
And so, then one other thing to take into consideration too on that point is that fetch lands are getting reprinted in Modern Horizons 2. So that'll drive down the prices of fetch lands. Well, the decks aren't really going to go down in value. What's going to go up in value are those kinds of staple cards.
Exactly. So hopefully you have listened to us in the past when we said, hey, this is a great time to be buying up modern staples, because it might start getting close to that point where you want to jump on it sooner rather than later before they get too high.
Yeah. Karns are $20 right now. Liliana's I got for $40 the other day. Tarmogoyfs are like $25. Like, if you don't have these in your collections, I highly recommend.
That's just insane to think about. Yeah, Double Masters Karn, $27.60. What used to be a $100 Planeswalker, but yeah, it's been reprinted so many times.
I bought a playset on MTG Sick Deals last month for $100 or for $80.
Excellent.
Steal.
All right. Well, I think that's going to do it for us. Anybody have anything in closing about modern, the bans, where to go for, go from here? I think the biggest thing is, yes, it sucks. Bans happen. You lose your deck. Sometimes we end up getting hit multiple times. I think I have 4 decks sleeved up right now that I have to kind of figure out what I'm going to be redoing with them in order to make them playable and competitive still, but stay with it. I don't think dropping out of Magic completely is the absolute right answer, but that's my opinion on it. If you're done with it, you're tired of bannings, you're tired of seeing your decks go, you know, it's been a blast playing with people.
So the one recommendation I would have for people, and I was pretty down during the Faithless Looting ban because that effectively banned all my decks. But moving forward, after I got back into Magic after that, I would recommend, as you know, quoting Wu-Tang, to diversify your bonds and have a few decks that aren't going to be all good at the same time. You know, I have humans, I have Dredge, I have, you know, Death Shadow, Death and Taxes. These are all decks that aren't going to be good at the same time, but it should all be an instance where one is good during that time. And you can find a lot of similar decks that share a lot of the common card pool, or at least the expensive parts, and build a modern lineup that way.
Jerry?
Stick with it. Your best bet is to, I mean, deck rentals are now a real thing, and more places are picking up on it. If you don't want to invest in such a big collection, get yourself a rental. I think that's your best bet.
Absolutely. But thanks everyone for joining in. Drew, it was an absolute blast and pleasure to have you on the show. We hope to have you on more. I know with you being attached to a submarine and me here in the future being attached to a submarine, it can get scarce, but hopefully we can work something out to continue to keep putting the content out on all the fantastic avenues you can find us, that being every major podcast network, Spotify, iTunes, Stitcher. You can also find us online on our website at www.thesnapcast.com, Twitter, Instagram, Twitch, and we're also diversifying the videos we were putting up on YouTube. We actually just put up our first Smite video, thanks to Tyler Lawton. He's been streaming Smite on Facebook for quite a while now. He's day 83, I believe, of his little 365 that he's going to be running through. So every day he will be streaming around 7 p.m. And Drew, you mentioned that you stream too on Twitch. Where can people find you?
Yep. So I'm on Twitch. I'm on Twitter. I'm on Instagram. It's twitch.tv /NavyDrew_MTG.
Excellent.
And Twitter will be that same handle.
And give this guy a follow. All right, he's been streaming not too long, right? Maybe about a month.
Yeah, about a month now.
Okay, you're up to about 30 followers already. Let's get him up to affiliate status so then they can start raking in those subs. But that's going to do it for us. Thanks again, everybody, for listening. Please be sure to tell your friends and stay tuned for more content that we have coming out. Y'all have a good one.
Oh, snap.